You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
CompTIA is the nonprofit trade association representing the global tech industry. That's more than 2,000 member companies and 3,000 business partners across the worldwide technology industry. Also, about 75 million professionals who take part in that industry. Todd Thibodeau is the president and CEO, and he's my guest today on the podcast. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Todd, I want to start with talking about the health of the industry. It has been a strong job growth industry over the past decade or more. And even during the pandemic, there were still needs for IT workers, cybersecurity workers, people in the tech industry who could help build strong systems and also monitor them. Where do you see us now in the industry? How is it continuing to be this strong?
The tech industry as a whole has almost been recession-proof over its history. I think going back kind of to the dawn of the modern age of the tech industry, which I see as kind of 1979, 8-ish time period when we started to see computers come into offices, when we started to see businesses really start to embrace information technology. We haven't had a period during that time where we've had any diminution really in the growth path for tech, and certainly in the workforce as that's evolved over time. We have about 10 million people who work in the tech industry in the US today. About half of those people work for a tech company, oftentimes not even in a tech role. Sometimes the biggest job categories within some of these tech companies actually are in sales, finance, operations, account management, not necessarily technology. Then the other half of that 10 million work in a tech job for a non-tech company. And you're starting to see more and more companies kind of classify themselves as being tech, including the hospitality industry, some of the retail industry. And these are people that are actually probably working in some of the more core jobs. And then we see kind of an outer circle to that, which are people that are in a really tech immersive job where they're using technology and systems, but they're not necessarily building platforms and networks and doing cybersecurity, some of the things you mentioned there. But it's just been a very strong global phenomenon over the last several years. And we see all over the world, there are just big gaps of talent pools where companies need more people. And it's not just the big name companies. That's the other misnomer about tech employment. A lot of times the media will focus on Silicon Valley and kind of use that as a proxy for the tech industry and employment. And when you see some layoffs, which are happening in some companies now, and you're starting to see some people maybe slowing their hiring, that's not the case in the rest of the tech employment space. You have lots of medium and small sized companies who are dying for talent, and they're not slowing down their hiring at all. So on a worldwide basis, we're seeing the same phenomenon, whether it's here in the US, whether it's in South America, UK, Africa, wherever you go, we need more tech talent.
I think you make a good point there, because every company probably has a tech role. Even a small company, if they do their online banking or if they do online sales, they need someone who probably can manage that. So everybody needs these skills for their businesses. So how are we supplying the people into those jobs? What is the pathway?
To talk about the salaries, the average salary for tech employees in the US is close to $110,000 a year. So we're talking about very substantial family sustaining wages for people that are working in tech. And those wages have grown faster than they have in some other categories. As it relates to the pipeline to get talent into this, we had so many people in the early years, even up through the 90s, that were geeks, people that wanted to come in and be in these tech roles because they just love the technology. They love building these computers. They love building these networks. And it was predominantly white men who moved into this space. I think what happened in the dot-com boom is we started to see things like outsourcing come in. We started to see entire companies go under, as a lot of these companies that were building themselves up through the Y2K transition, that were building themselves up through some of the things that were happening in the dot-com boom. Some of that went bust a little bit after that. And tech started to become following that. It was sexy up to that point. I think it lost some of its sexiness a little bit during that period. And you started to see people kind of shying away from it because it didn't appear outwardly to be that secure of an industry, even though it was. And I think what happened during that time is we started to see a de-emphasis of tech curriculum in schools as schools went more towards coding and things. They kind of lost that kind of tech infrastructure training that they were providing to students about computers and networking, cyber. You're starting to see that come back in now. As we started to see this emphasis on STEM as well, it actually minimized the amount and breadth of tech exposure that kids were getting to all the different careers that were possible for them. And it did get narrowed down to, well, if you're going to work in tech, you must be working in coding, right? This idea that coding were the only tech jobs that were out there. So the combination of seeing people being outsourced, offshored, the dot-com bust, the implementation of this emphasis on math and coding within the schools, it took away some of that tech education, that computer tech education that we saw traditionally. And that pipeline kind of slowed down a little bit there. Then we saw the universities kind of minimize those programs again in favor of coding. So coding sucked a little bit of the wind out of the tech pipeline for a period of time. But I think we're seeing that change a little bit. Cybersecurity is becoming more important as cloud computing is becoming more important, as the infrastructure for IoT, smart cities, some of these infrastructure pieces are kind of coming back into the forefront. You're starting to see more exposure to people seeing those as long-term job career options. But I think in general, we're dealing with a challenge in the pipeline, which is more about the confidence gap that's emerged here, where people think, I can't do that job. I don't have the skills. I don't have all the things that people are telling me I need to have. Oh, I need to be a math and science genius to work in tech, don't I? I need to have all these skills around engineering or robotics or all these other things that people think they need to have. And so what's emerged is this confidence gap has grown and grown and grown over the last 10 to 15 years, where right now the tech industry has the largest confidence gap of probably any industry, where people are looking at it being like, I can't do that. I'd sooner be able to do nursing than be able to do a tech job if you were starting with no skills. When in fact, that's not true. It's probably one of the more accessible careers when you get into the right kind of training, when you get into the right kind of learning environment. The skills can be acquired relatively quickly. Less than 9 months, you can be prepared to start in a lot of these entry-level tech jobs and even some of the medium ones as well. So I think that's the thing we're dealing with now is trying to get as many people as possible kind of over this confidence gap so they realize, yeah, you can do this. You have the skills, or you can acquire the skills relatively easily. And I think that's one of the big challenges we're facing right now.
You know, you talk about the confidence gap. How do we correct for that? How do we change that mindset and show people that they have a future in this career?
What we need to start with is exposure to what actually is required to pursue some of these job roles earlier for kids and also for parents. Parents still play a really, really big role in determining what kinds of careers kids they think are within their reach. And that's a little bit less with Gen Z, because Gen Z is relying on random people on TikTok to tell them about what kinds of things that they can do and what kinds of things are possible, which scares me a little.
Me too.
But they're still relying on role models. They're still relying on parents. They're still relying on teachers, other people that are within their space to give them this guidance. We just need to arm these individuals with more information that's honest and real, letting them know that you don't have to be a math and science genius to get started in a cyber career, that all these people are not coming out of university programs. The majority of people who are working in tech did not have a tech degree when they come into these jobs. They come into it from other fields, that you can transition, that you can get real world skills through certification programs like ours, through great community college programs, through other training providers that are out there, through self-study, live online training. There's a whole bunch of different options that are emerging now. And we're increasingly trying to put a lot of real world application into our training so that we can make people job ready on day one. And the skill sets that are required are good problem solving skills, curious, having grit, you know, having good durable skills, soft skills, whatever you want to call those today, being able to work effectively with others, communication, all these different pieces are really important. And nowhere in that does it say you need to be great at math or you need to be great at science to be able to do some of these jobs. So we need to get that information earlier into the hands of schools, into the hands of parents, into the hands of students, so the kids can say, they can start to think about these options. Doesn't mean they'll take them, doesn't mean they'll pursue them, but at least they'll have an honest broker telling them what's really true about what you need to be successful in these fields. And I just don't think that's happening today. Again, going back to the coding issue, schools just said, oh, coding, check, STEM, we're done. Most of those kids who do those mandatory coding programs in schools like New York State requiring all students to take a coding class, almost all those kids won't be coders. So making them take this class, maybe disenfranchising them from what they think tech can really be about, helps eliminate a bunch of people from the pipeline from day one, as opposed to giving them a broad perspective. Because we've identified about 30 different job roles, which are key to the tech workspace. And what we'd like to do is begin educating as many people as possible on those different fields, showing them what it's like to live a day in that job, what it's like to acquire the skills. How do you do it? How long does it take? How much does it cost? How would you go about it? Where are these jobs? Are they growing? How much do they pay? All the different things around that so that people can make a good choice. We just have to get that information out more broadly to people. We do a survey every 6 months where we track the number of people who are looking to change their careers, either upgrade their existing field that they're in or to look for a new field that they want to move into. And right now that number is about 50 million, which is historically extremely high number. It's about almost 30% of the adult workforce is looking for these new options. So we need to get to them too in some way. It needs to start in that maybe 10th, 11th, 12th grade, but then we need to catch those adults later who are career changers as well. Since they're so integral to feeding that tech pipeline, we have to have people who are transitioning from other fields.
One of the complaints that we've heard over the years is that the industry is still not as diverse as it should be. And I think you touched on something just now, which is role models, people talking about the career possibilities that are there, seeing someone who does that job in your own life. So if there's already a lack of diversity, who is changing that model? And how do you change that model? How do you increase the talent pool?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest challenges the industry faces. The demand is way more than we're going to get from white men. So we need to move beyond that. And we need to make sure that we're creating an environment where those individuals feel welcome, where they see individuals like themselves. But it does start, like you said, with role models. And so when we've done some of this confidence gap research, the confidence gap is bigger in rural areas. It's bigger among women. It's bigger among people of color than it is among white men or women. So this idea that if you're a young, say, African-American who lives in rural Alabama, you probably don't know too many people who work in the tech industry, partly because there's not maybe a lot of tech companies in your area or for whatever reasons relative to the demographics of that area. So it's really tough for you to see yourself in that role. So I think organizations like ourselves, we need to do more to find those people who are working in those jobs and highlight them in tools and information sets that we can make available to people. So we're looking at completely redesigning our website to create these experiential explorations that people can go. And we're going to profile 6 or 7 people for each of those 30 job roles that I mentioned. And we're going to make sure that that list of people is diverse, that people can see others like themselves. So that's the role that we're going to try to play in that. We have other DE&I initiatives that we're doing, and we actually quit lobbying as an organization because we wanted to spend more of the money on diversity initiatives than we thought we were getting value from doing this lobbying. Like, why should we lobby to help trillion-dollar companies when we could take the money we were spending there and put it into programs? So some of the money that we're investing there will go into the middle schools to help create digital awareness, digital literacy among middle schools, students, and their parents. Because the more that we can get the parents of some of these minority audiences to think and dream that their kid can work in these industries, the better. It can't just come from role models that are working in the industry already. It has to come from role models that are close to them. So more people around young people and job changers too need to see others and recognize that they're welcome, that they're needed, that there's good opportunity for them, there's challenging opportunity. And we just haven't done a good job. I think for so long, as I said, we lived off the sexiness of the industry. Doesn't everybody want to work in tech? Well, right now, that's not the case. right now, we don't have everybody wants to work in tech. We actually have to work harder to recruit these people. It's time for everybody to kind of wake up to that. We're just not going to have this steady stream of people. We actually have to go out and find them. And we have to do it in new and different ways.
You mentioned that you're going into middle schools. I know you partner with a lot of different academic institutions to help get that word out, but also train and certify people. What kind of certifications are you offering?
We have a range of certifications now. I think the number is around 14 now. We're kind of the world's leading provider of what are called vendor neutral foundational IT certifications. So if you want to get a job as a help desk professional or a tech support specialist, we have CompTIA A+. If you want to get a foothold in the computer networking space as a network administrator or a cloud administrator, we have Cloud Plus and Network Plus. Security Plus is the world's leading foundational cybersecurity credential. I think almost 700,000 people worldwide hold this certification. It's the most widely held cybersecurity credential in the world. So we provide these pathways. But I think what we're going to try to adjust to is something which is more job role based, where it's not just about going and getting an individual credential, but it's preparing someone to do that job. And that's a lot different. When you're studying for a test, it's different than learning to do a job. Our credentials will be a part of that process, but they can't be the only thing, because some people need a longer runway. A lot of these certification programs, people can train for them in 5 to 7 days. There's no way you can prepare to do a job if you don't have any skills or background in 5 to 7 days. You're going to need 30 days. You're going to need 60 days. You're going to need 900 hours, however long that ends up being. So we're going to try to provide a lot more options for how people can consume this. And this is where academic partners come into play, with community colleges, which have been our closest allies in this process. Western Governors, as an online university, is a huge partner of ours. They're doing a fantastic job in helping to prepare people for these. The people who are not doing a good job are the general universities. For the longest time, we would get this stiff arm from them when we'd go to talk with them about working with them on things. We'd say, you know, we can help you. We can map our certification learning objectives against your curriculum and tell you where you have holes. And usually they would say, no, we're good. We educate, you train. So we would get this really dismissive kind of comment about, yeah, we're better than you. But then we would do the mapping ourselves and understand that they were probably covering maybe 40% of what they should be covering, even though they considered themselves one of the top programs. And we saw this time and again with many universities. There's a few progressive ones like Arizona State, who really understands what it means to drive the workforce and what it takes to prepare people for these jobs, that it's not just a knowledge dump. That's kind of what college has become. It's just this big knowledge dump. And that's what high school has kind of become, is just this big knowledge dump, which prepares people to take SATs and ACTs or prepares them to go to school. And then when you're in college, when you're done, you can't really do anything. Most degrees don't even prepare you to do the jobs. You ask any employer when they take fresh college grads, they have to train them for 6 to 9 more months before they can even really do anything, because they don't come out with skills. Where our programs are more about giving people competencies and having them be job ready. We want all the people who come from our programs to be 80% job ready on day one, so that an employer says, yeah, okay, I'll take you the other 20% of the way there. We love the fact that you're 80% of the way there to start. I think the community colleges get it. Some of the great online universities like WGU get it. I think the certification groups like ourselves get it. But the people who are not getting it are the high schools and the universities.
So what is the employer's role in this? Because we see a lot of apprenticeships or internships, the idea that you can learn skills on the job. Are you partnering with any businesses to give people that real world experience?
Yeah, we're part of the administration. And you know, I will give one kudo to the previous administration, is they're the ones that started this whole apprenticeship idea. They're the ones that really got engaged around workforce. I think they brought some people into the administration who are really passionate about helping to develop some really meaningful and substantial workforce programs. So we've been participating in that. But the challenge that we're finding is that employers still look at that as a burden. They still get it like, oh, I have to train this person. You know, they have all these open job postings, and sometimes we've seen the number as high as 1 million, where there's 1 million open tech jobs. But those employers are only going to hire for those jobs if they find the exact right person. And I always say the exact right person is already working for somebody else. Unemployment in the tech sector is virtually zero. If you were a good professional in any of these areas, you could probably have 2 jobs if you had the time to do it. So these employers are looking for people who are very specifically configured in terms of their skill sets. I'm not sure when this happened, when people, companies stopped really investing in their talent. Maybe it came out of the financial crisis where dollars just got tight and people stopped doing that. Maybe it became, they got too fat and happy on being able to outsource a lot of their work to people. So it was like, well, if we're going to have internal staff, we'll just make sure we get the exact right person because we can always find a contractor to do it. And then we don't have to worry about training them. I'm not sure what the confluence of events was that caused this lack of desire to train up your existing people, but the best pool of people you have for interview openings are the people you already have. Like, take someone who's got drive, determination, has demonstrated a good sense of work ethic, and train them up to take on some of these positions, and then, you know, backfill for them in some of these other jobs. But the companies just don't seem to be willing to do that. We're seeing some movement there, but it's a big ocean liner that's going to take a long time to turn around. I say that about the universities as well. I think the pain points haven't been powerful enough yet to get people to do that, but it's starting to change. And we'll see. This apprenticeship program has been operating for almost 2 years. The companies that are medium to small, they're embracing it like crazy, but the big companies are not. And part of this too goes back to the college requirements, that they're still wanting to recruit college grads. Even the companies who are saying, well, we're not requiring it anymore, but we're still preferring it. So how much have you really changed if you're not requiring it, but you're still preferring it and you're still hiring these people in? So they're still going to that well, as opposed to saying, how can I connect up with a local community college? How can I work more closely with CompTIA to feed me a steady stream of people who have gone to the time, expense, and effort to get certified for some of these jobs? We're trying to work with different employers on this as well. And it's just really, really challenging. And we see people over-specking jobs. So even for entry-level jobs, they're looking for people with 5 years experience. That doesn't exist. Those people work for somebody else. So,
and get paid very well for it. Yeah.
Sure. And so you'd have to cherry pick them away, which isn't the best approach. So I think, you know, we're trying to do what we can to create more people into the pipeline, but then eventually we have to get employers to accept these people. The result has to be a job in the end.
As we wrap up, I'd like you to kind of address those people out there with the confidence gap that they don't think they can do it. How do you encourage them? What do you say to them now to go out and find that pathway? What is your advice for them?
I think one of the best local resources any people have is their local community college system. And almost every community college system in the country has tech programs. Go and do an informational interview with a professor. Go and talk to some of the students that are in those programs. Understand their backgrounds. You know, get some of that real world engagement on those. Try to find some individuals on Facebook or LinkedIn who are in the tech industry and ask them questions. You have to do a little bit of this work on your own. And then also come to our website for resources as well. The idea that you can go and talk to these professors at local community colleges, they'd be more than happy to talk with you about what it takes to really prepare, because they're rubber hits the road kind of situations there. They have people that are coming from all these diverse backgrounds. So they're maybe in the best position to say, look, I've had a ton of students just like you, and they've been successful. They've done well in the programs, and they've gotten jobs and are doing really well. We had a program called IT Ready, which took people with no tech background at all. Some of these people had been out of work for like 2 years. A couple of people had never even turned on a computer. 8 weeks later, they were doing tech support for major companies. So we know that anybody can acquire these skills. And I think that's what you can get by interacting with students at the community colleges or some of the professors or administrators of the tech programs within those. And then just start doing your research with us. We're going to be developing tons of resources that will give you these kind of career explorations where you can start to say, yeah, I could probably do that job. I have some skills. I have this. I can learn stuff. I'm curious. I want to solve problems. I like working in teams. I like technology. I'm excited by it. I want to do good. You know, all these things that get people jazzed about careers today. We just need more of that out there. So we're really going to refocus our efforts and redouble our efforts to create a great hub that then can be used by our partners. But you can go and talk to, there's for-profit training companies that prepare people for our certifications or others in the industry. Go talk with them. They'll tell you what it really takes to do this, what kinds of people are successful. It's just a matter of going out and doing the research. But if you just buy into the headlines, you're going to be scared. Your confidence gap is going to be big. and you're going to think it's too expensive, it'll take too long, I don't have the skills, I can't learn this stuff, I'm not good at it. When the truth is, it's not like that. Once you get into it, anybody can acquire these. It makes sense, it's logical, but it doesn't require the skills that people think it does. And you won't learn that until you talk to people.
Todd, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
My guest today has been Todd Thibodeau, President and CEO of CompTIA. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Thank you for listening.